Hey, real quick, I just wanted to let you know that Gabba Gabba Huh is now a record store. Well, not really a store, but a booth at an antique store located in Eastridge Mall in Gastonia, North Carolina. Vintage Village is three stores down from Dillard's on the left. And my booth is on the left side of Vintage Village. It's the one with all the records. You can't miss it. I've got over 1,000 records, toys, t-shirts, DVDs, VHS, all kinds of stuff there. So come check it out. Gabba Gabba Huh Records and Vintage Goods, located in Vintage Village at Eastridge Mall, Gastonia, North Carolina. You are now listening to the Gabba Gabba Huh Talks podcast, where we bring you conversations with people connected to the Carolinas underground music scene. Your host, Mike Phillips of Van Huskins. There we go.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good. How are you doing? Let me see. You'll have to forgive me. I'm dog sitting for my parents right now. So okay. They just came running because they heard me start talking. But
oh, so, that's great. What kind of dogs are you babysitting?
They're mutts. Come here, Luna. Let's see. Here's Luna.
Oh, my gosh. Hey, cutie pie. Hey there.
Come here, Lila. Come here, girl. And then there's Lila.
Oh, my gosh. I hope they're spoiled rotten. They deserve to be. They're cute.
Oh, they definitely. Oh. They definitely are.
Oh, man. That's great. That's great. I see you. And sport the Thin Lizzy shirt there. It's a great band, Thin Lizzy.
Yeah, thank you.
Love them.
Putting Lila down, she got her foot caught on the headphone thing there. So,
well, if you need to tend to them at any time, it's fine. However you want to do it, it's cool. We can always take a break, edit whatever they need. That's totally fine.
Yeah, they're fine. The only thing is, there's a slight chance, you know, they may start barking at somebody outside or something.
Oh, well, that'll add some interesting content to the show.
Yeah,
that's actually cool. investigate it.
Yeah, if they were to start doing that, usually, I mean, I edit some stuff out, but I also leave a lot of stuff in that happens like that, like technical difficulties
cool.
And things. So there's always a possibility that'll happen. I'm making sure I got everything set up good because she knocked my stuff over.
Oh, man. That's all right.
So how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I just woke up from my Sunday nap. I don't know if you ever take a nap on Sunday afternoon, but that's one of the joys of living, I think.
I actually do, and today was one of those days. I kind of suffer from insomnia, so a lot of nights I can't sleep, and there's really no – I can't think of a reason why. I'm just not able to go to sleep. So Sundays tend to be more my lazy days. I mean, I do a lot of – there are a lot of Sundays where I'm gone from morning till night, but if I can – pull it off, Sundays are my lazy days. So I usually try to sleep in a little bit. And today I actually got a nap in too. So that was pretty good.
Oh, look at that. We're both living the dream now.
Yeah, which means
that's
like
good.
The rest of the week I'll have really hard time sleeping.
Yeah, I hear you. All right. So your parents, are they also in Kings Mountain?
Yeah. Actually, like,
oh, that's cool.
They've got an apartment above their garage, and that's where I live. So they're just going out for the night. And I came to hang out with the dogs and to – you know, just kind of chill out in here for a little bit.
Well, we have a lot to chat about because I'm all about that area. I was born in Shelby and raised in Rock Hill.
Okay. Yeah, that's awesome.
Used to run up to Kings Mountain for all kinds of stuff, family reunions and stuff over at the park.
I knew that you were, you know, from Rock Hill for a while, but I didn't know that you were born in Shelby. So you're a Cleveland County boy, which is awesome because we don't have enough of those on here.
Well, I was from 1965 to 1968, but my dad worked with Stevens. He got transferred. It was a textile company, J.P. Stevens. Mm-hmm. He got transferred from Shelby to Rock Hill in 68. So when I was three, we moved to Rock Hill, and I grew up there. So
okay.
I'm pretty much a Rock Hillian. I have a lot of roots there. I have a lot of friends still there. That's kind of where I grew up. And I was a Northwestern High kid.
Okay.
So does Kings Mountain have one high school, Kings Mountain High?
Yeah, we just had the one high school. It's a fairly small town. I mean, it's growing. It's growing a lot, but it's still pretty small.
Yeah, my brother Johnny graduated from Shelby High in 68. He's actually in the band again, which is super cool, actually.
Yeah,
to have him back in.
Yeah.
So there's definitely a connection there. My grandma was in Shelby, so we used to go through Kings Mountain all the time. Now, I have to ask you, Mm-hmm. Have you made the pilgrimage to Bridges Barbecue on Highway 74? You ever go over there to Shell Beauty Barbecue?
Yes. That's one of my favorite places, you know, of all time to eat. It's I grew up with it. It's one of those places we went to pretty regularly. We still get food from there regularly, but we don't go there too often anymore.
Carry out kind of thing.
Yeah, I do carry out. But yeah, I love it. It's my favorite barbecue. I always say that you haven't had barbecue until you've had Bridges. Like,
oh my gosh, it's so good. It seems like in Kings Mountain, isn't there a Mountain View restaurant? It seems like I took my wife and kids there on a day trip.
It
actually does have a Mountain View. We sat there and ate one time. I think we're heading over to the state park to do some hiking.
Okay.
Of course, it's a paved hiking trail, so it's more like just strolling, but that's what I like. So we've been up there a pretty good bit over the years.
At Mountain View, I've been there quite a bit. It's not my favorite place to eat, but I mean, it always hits the spot.
for sure. I think we got breakfast there or something. That sounds right.
Well, we can go ahead and get started. So today I'm talking to Chuck Walker, and you were in a band called Bedlam Hour.
That's right.
And I first became aware of you guys when I was a teenager and sort of found my way into punk rock and then found my way to Charlotte and to the record stores in Charlotte. I started just kind of blindly picking up 7-inches, you know, because for $2 or $3 you could hear a band and I'd spend $10-$15. And one of the first ones I picked up was Tonka. And I loved it so much that I walked in there one day and they had Stupid by the Grace of God.
Which
caught my eye originally anyway, just because, you know, it's got a Confederate flag on it that says Stupid by the Grace of God. So that was, you know, all about what I was about, you know, and still am sort of where I am. I completely understand that. But then I happened to see that Tonka was on. I'm like, well, I'm definitely getting this. And then you guys were on there. I think Frankenberry Mosh is on that one.
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that's how I became acquainted with you. But we'll talk about, and so that band ran from, you know, 80s to sort of mid to late 90s, and
we ran from basically officially 83 to around 96. Mm-hmm. But that last couple of years it was just kind of like we did put out the Contact CD in 1995, but gigging was a little bit sporadic because two of our members had already moved to different areas. Mm-hmm. Derek Roddy, our drummer, he lives in Florida. And our bass player, Adam Colasar, lives in New York City. So it was a little hard to do stuff. And then basically by 96, I was pretty much done because I became a dad. I just, hey, guys, listen, you know, it's fun. I'm going to see you when this kid is fully grown, independent, out of the house. I had another kid. So now the kids are grown-ups. I'm a granddad. So I survived cancer last year.
Congratulations.
You survive cancer, it changes your mind up.
Oh, yeah.
And so my priorities changed, and it was just time. It was time to get back together. And so I reached out to the guys, and one thing led to another.
Heck yeah.
And there's more details behind that, but that's why we're back together.
Yeah.
You know, it's just fun. Life is short, and let's do something creative that we love to do. And enjoy our time with our friends from the Carolinas and beyond that are into this kind of music and get back in the game. That's what we're doing.
Fail to look upon the mirror.
awesome. And we'll talk about all that a little bit more in a little bit. But you've listened to a couple of episodes of my podcast.
Oh, yeah,
And so, you know, I kind of like to start off with sort of, you know, what was it about music that grabbed you when you were a kid, or when what made you get interested in music as a young kid? You know, early memories.
Yeah. Well, first of all, congratulations on your podcast. I've really taken a deep dive into it. And having played with a lot of the folks, or know a lot of the folks that you've interviewed, you know, being from the South Carolina area, I'm good friends with Chris Bickle. And so it was great to hear Chris and really love to see what he's got going on now with his filmmaking.
Oh, yeah.
And then also Jay from Tonka. We actually played with Tonka. Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh. I think it was at the Milestone once. And, of course, I was familiar with them from Southern by the Grace of – no, South, Stupid by the Grace of God.
Not the
Leonard Skinner, but the satirical compilation. And so, so I was really happy with what I heard on the podcast. I thought it was cool.
Well, thank you.
I know Greg Ellis. I know a lot of the folks from up that way. Over the years, we've crossed paths, just socially or musically. But as far as answering your question in terms of getting into music, well, I really come from a musical family. Grew up in Rock Hill. My mom sang in the church choir. I grew up in, just like a lot of kids in the 60s and 70s, I grew up in children's choir, youth choir. So I learned a lot of music theory that way. Had a really, really good music teacher at Ebenezer Avenue Elementary School.
Okay.
Miss Smalls. And we could bring in records.
Yeah.
Right. So it was exciting. And if you've been over to Rock Hill, there's a place called the Oratory. It's where the Catholic priests live, I believe. Mm-hmm. And they used to have a big flea market every year. And so I think I was nine in fourth grade. And we weren't broke, but my family didn't have a lot of money. So any kind of thing like a record player, that was a real luxury. So when I was nine, they actually, my folks bought me a nice used record player, one of the suitcase kind.
Yeah.
And it was cool, and it sounded great. It was probably from like the early 60s or something like that. And so I was able to start buying records. Now, you had to be careful, depending on where you plugged it in the house. If you try to use it, it shocked the crap out of you. But, but yeah, so I had that record player. And then the first record I ever bought was the 7-inch for Bay City Rollers, Saturday Night. Mm-hmm. Came out in 1975, which I'm sure you know was the inspiration for Blitzkrieg Bop, because Joey Ramone fell in love with the Bay City Rollers. So I had that record. And then at the Rock Hill Mall, see, we're going to be talking a lot about our region today. Yeah. At the Rock Hill Mall, we had a Roses. And they still have one here in Georgetown. I live in Pawleys.
We have one in Kings Mountain, too.
Okay. All right. Okay. So Roses was famous for two things. You could go sit at the lunch counter and you could get the banana split. And if it was your birthday, they would get a balloon down and they would pop the balloon. And there was a little ticket with a prize inside. It was like a free hot dog or something.
Yeah.
But also they had a decent record section. And you could see like Kiss albums in there and stuff like that. But the first record I bought was it was a compilation record by Atom 8 Limited, and it was Disco Party. And it was like all these disco hits like Rock the Boat and the best one on there was Rufus and Chaka Khan, Tell Me Something Good. And they would all be like lined up together with no gap, so you could have a disco party. So I listened to that. Then things really got cool, because every once in a while I'd have to go to Charlotte for a doctor's appointment or something. Mm-hmm. And we'd go to Park Road Shopping Center.
Yeah.
And they had a Wars, and that they had a really good record section because, you know, Charlotte, they're classy up there. So I bought Barry Manilow, I Write the Song 7-inch, and just a lot of bubblegummy, you know, kind of sappy, I guess what you call yacht rock now. I liked all that. I liked the idea of melody and stuff like that.
But then
the game changer was when my brother Chris went off to Clemson. Even though I'm a Gamecock, he went to Clemson, which was fine. It's a fine school. But anyway, he got to see all these cool bands when he went to college. He got to see Boston came to Clemson. So he bought the Boston album, brought it home, and then I just fell in love with it, the production, everything about it. And then what else did he get? Oh, he bought Billy Joel, The Stranger. So I was always really into like songwriting, you know, like songwriter kind of stuff and, you know, heavy music. And then my brother Johnny, who's in the band with me, He had gotten out of the Navy after Vietnam and came home, and he had built himself a little acoustic guitar, and he had some bongos. Mm-hmm. And so he showed me a couple of chords on the guitar, and my sister Susie, she sang and played guitars, awesome guitar player. And so I picked up some stuff there. And then I always had a fascination with the drums. And so, in fact, I don't know if you've been on my Instagram for Bedlam Hour Official, but there's a lot of stuff about all these old stories on there. Yeah. But Mr. Scott Carroll was my band director at Sullivan Junior High School in Rock Hill. Mm-hmm. And he's the one that really taught me a lot about rhythm. In fact, I'm going to see Scott and his band play next Saturday in Orangeburg. So, okay. And I haven't seen him in person in 40 years.
Yeah.
So anyway, so that was a game changer because I learned percussion. And then in eighth grade, my dad bought me a drum set, a $50 drum set. It was like a knockoff of a Slingerland kit from the 60s, a Japanese kit. And that was a big deal. So I was learning percussion. Then Santa Claus brought me the second Boston album, and I bought the Beatles 67 to 70, and I was good on the drum set. I had a talent for it, and so I started learning all those songs on the drums. And so the first thing I did was I sat down and put on the Beatles 67 to 70. Mm-hmm. And I learned one track at a time on the drums, and it took like 2 weeks per track after school, working Monday through Friday on it.
Yeah.
Okay, track one, Strawberry Fields, boom. Okay, 2 weeks later, I had it down. I did that for all those Beatles songs. Then the next thing I did was the Yes Fragile album.
Okay, stepped it up a little bit.
Learned that over 6 months. Then I said, it's time to graduate. Let's put on Rush 2112.
Oh, yeah.
Learn those over 6 months. Meanwhile, a lot of things were happening in terms of music. We're talking 79-ish, mm-hmm. 78 through 80. And so one night, I was in junior high school. It was a Saturday night. One of the things I used to love to do is stay up and watch Saturday Night Live. So I'm literally a kid in my pajamas. I'm watching Saturday Night Live by myself. My parents are already going to sleep. I'm the youngest of four kids, so I was the only one in the house. And these aliens from outer space came on Saturday Night Live. They had beehive hairdos. They were making sea monster sounds.
Yeah.
A genius, Mr. Fred Snyder, came out. best lead singer personality ever.
Yeah, he's awesome.
The B-52s. Mm. And when I saw the B-52s on Saturday Night Live, my life literally changed. I'm like, okay. So all this other stuff is cool, and I love it. But this is a game changer for me. This is something I've never seen before. It was punk rock, really, the B-52s.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
That same year, there used to be a radio station in Lancaster for a minute called K99, and they played rock and roll.
Yeah.
Not like classic rock and not top 40. They kind of accidentally got a bunch of new wave records.
Yeah.
And they were playing stuff like Split Ends, they would play some Blondie, mm-hmm. That kind of stuff. And then they also played some Beatles and Stones. So one day they had this contest about the Beatles, and it was like, okay, what was the Beatles' first number one hit in America? I'm like, okay, I want to hold your hand. That was the answer. So I called and I won, and I had heard a little bit about the Clash. I knew the Clash existed, but I didn't know a lot about them. Mm-hmm. And he said, okay, well, you can have any album that we have in our promotional album in our music library. I said, do you have anything about a Clash? He said, yeah, actually we do. And they said, we have a Clash album here. I said, okay, I'll take the Clash album. And it was Give Them Enough Rope.
Awesome.
The Clash album, Give Them Enough Rope. Yeah, Tommy Gunn, you know, which has that, ta-da, you know, it's just really, really good. So I brought that home. So I had all these ideas kind of swirling around in my head. You know, I had the B-52s, but I still liked arena rock. I liked some prog rock, things that were technical, but I liked funny stuff, you know, like innovative things. Mm-hmm. So all those ideas were swirling around, and I started playing in some, you know, garage bands and stuff in Rock Hill.
Yeah.
And The first year I played with my buddy John Leroy, who ended up being on the Rock the Cradle album with me later on, and we did a Beatles cover, I Dig a Pony, and I played the drums in that band. The next year, and this is before I ever heard the term hardcore and knew nothing about hardcore at all, didn't know it existed, I played in a band for a talent show at Northwestern High, and it was with my friend David and my friend Anna.
Yeah.
I played the drums again. And we did Alice Cooper, whom I loved also. I bought him at Woolworth. I bought his album. And we did School's Out. Well, guess what we called our band? 1980. Hardcore. We knew nothing about hardcore. Yeah. We didn't know it was a thing because we were in Rock Hill. So our band was called Hardcore. But then things really got juicy, and I ended up getting into hardcore as we know it now because my brother that went to Clemson, Chris, he got a job in California when he graduated as an aerospace engineer. And so he moved out to basically Redondo Beach, L.A., Torrance area. Mm-hmm. And for my birthday present, when I turned 17, my parents bought me, it's probably their present too, because I was gone for a month. They bought me a plane ticket out and back to live with my brother in California for the summer.
Yeah, yeah.
And he had another roommate, another scientist guy was his roommate, and they would go to work during the daytime, but his roommate let me ride his 10-speed, and I got to ride all over L.A., and it was the summer of 82, and punk thing was really starting to kick off there, and the new wave thing was big. Missing Persons were the number one song on the radio, Words. Let's see. And I noticed, you know, the punk hairstyles. And, of course, by that time, I had heard about the Sex Pistols from the York County Public Library. I rented three I checked out three records there that changed my life. In the year 1982, I checked out Frank Zappa's Apostrophe.
Oh, yeah.
I checked out Nevermind the Bullets by the Sex Pistols. And I checked out the prog rock band UK's Live in Japan album, Night After Night. And that has Terry Bozzio from Missing Persons on the drums, and then it had John Wetton from King Crimson, and it had Eddie Jobson from Zappa.
Yeah.
So all those things were swirling in my head. But when I went out to L.A., and when I wasn't riding that bike all the way out to Venice Beach on the big sidewalk that they have on their boardwalk and checking out the punk, you know, culture and stuff and just enjoying being out there, if it were rainy or something, I would sit in and listen to my brother's roommate's record collection.
Yeah.
He was into prog, so he had Genesis, he had Yes, and Rush. And so I'd listen to that stuff all the time. One day my brother comes home from his job at the aerospace place. Hey, Chuck, you're in the new wave, right? Because by that time I loved Devo and the B-52s and Blondie and the Cars. And I said, yeah, I love new wave. He said, well, a friend of mine from work is a new wave guy. He said there's a new wave concert Friday night at this place called the Whiskey A Go-Go.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, okay, that sounds good. Let's go. I said, who is it? He said, I'm not sure. He said, it's a couple of bands. One's called Fear. And the other one is this band called Aggression. So I'm like, okay, that's cool. I knew nothing about them. We go there. Okay. First of all, it's packed out with punk rock looking people, like people with like, that draw on their clothes and have shaved heads or mohawks and a bunch of earrings and stuff, you know, cool people. I'm like, oh, wow, this is really cool. So in the Whiskey, they have a dance floor area, and then like a lot of bars, they have an upstairs. We can sit on this balcony thing, kind of look down at the dance floor. So we go upstairs. Remember, this is 82, so this is right before MTV goes on the air. This video screen, kind of like you would see in an old school classroom, comes down. And it's the birth of record companies playing commercials for their albums, you know, music videos.
Yeah.
This new wave band that had kind of a top 40 hit that was mellow, the Motels. They had this song called Only the Lonely. They start playing this Motels video. The punk rock kids are throwing beer at it. They're booing it. And some kid, this is the first thing I see in here. Some kid literally goes up to the screen and sets it on fire. They have set the screen on fire. The fire had to be extinguished. The screen was removed. And then Aggression comes out. And I could tell they were into skateboarding and stuff. They talked a lot about skateboarding. Turns out it's the band Aggression, which, you know, ended up finding out about later and listening to. And they looked cool. They had shaved heads and they were you know, doing this skanky dance thing. I'd never seen that before. And kids were jumping off the stage. I'd never seen that before.
That would have been,
I thought it was really, really, really cool.
Wild to experience that at that time, like just in LA. I mean, like,
yeah, for real. And then I was like, wow, this can't get any wilder. And then all of a sudden, Leaving of Fear takes the stage. And I'm like, yes, this just got wilder. I was in shock. I was like, he was swearing at the audience and he was challenging the audience to fights, and they were going to fight him. And, but then when they started playing, wow, the music was so good. It had the polyrhythmic time changes of the prog rock I loved. It had the power and the weirdness of the punk rock I just discovered.
Yep.
And it had the kind of camp and humor of new wave. I was like, wow, this is really good. I really love it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was quite an experience for me. And then, and that was like a Friday night. It was in May of 82. I actually looked up the date. I'll be posting about that at some point on the Bedlam Hour Instagram. I try to go back and catalog all these events.
Yeah, I've noticed that. I like that about that too.
Well, you know, we all lived it together. And so I like it when people help my memories. I like to help other people's memories as well.
It's kind of like with what I do with this podcast. It's important to document that stuff because there wasn't a lot of mainstream documentation of it like there is so many other things.
No, it's literally this random tidbit we still have. That same weekend, that Sunday night, I think we had a cookout at my brother's house. And then I would listen to his stereo, and this, the KROQ at the time had this show on Sunday nights called, this is in LA, the Young Marquis and Stanley Show.
Mm-hmm.
And they played a combination of new wave, import music, and local-ish California punk.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the first time I heard Black Flag TV Party.
Yeah.
And, Flock of Seagulls, who, and I think I'm about 10 years ahead of you probably, but they came to Charlotte and I actually got to see them. So I heard a lot of the stuff that was getting ready to break on the East Coast about 6 months before it did.
Mm-hmm.
So it was Flock of Seagulls, Sparks, X, Black Flag, Oingo Boingo, a lot of these really good bands, and Oingo Boingo are awesome. They're back together.
Yeah.
Great. So I made a cassette of that and I took it home to my friends. And we were all Northwestern High band guys, band geeks, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. I said, guys, let's play these songs. And so we learned a bunch of songs. And we played stuff from that record I won at the radio station. We played Tommy Gunn by The Clash.
Mm-hmm.
And records from the library. We played God Save the Queen by The Pistols. We played Blue Spark by X. We played I Predict by Sparks. Also, new Sparks record out. It's really good.
Yeah.
So we learned all these songs. This takes me into the senior year of high school. And my parents are, you know, very supportive. And they're like, oh, wow, that's cool. You're really into this. That's great. So my buddy Jake Hunter, who played with me in a new wave band for one show in 1980, and was a band friend of mine. He actually opened a recording studio. By this time, he's like 19 or 20.
Okay.
It was in Rock Hill. It's called Sun Sounds.
Yeah, I've heard of
that. Downtown Rock Hill above White's Biz Machines.
Mm-hmm.
And so for Christmas, my parents bought me an hour of studio time at Jake's place. And so by that point, I had already written some original music for different occasions, but nothing. I wrote the one song for Metaphysical and the Membranes that we recorded at Mr. Carroll's studio, the guy that taught me how to play the drums, who I'm going to see next week. And it was kind of a new wavy thing. But I wrote a new song called Teacher, and it was because, to be honest, I had a crush on my teacher.
Okay.
I thought she was really cute.
We've all been there.
Yeah. And, you know, of course, Van Halen caught on to that a little bit later, which is interesting. My band, the punk band we started, the cover band with some originals, was OU812. And we had this song called Teacher that was kind of an upbeat song. If you listen to it now, you can hear that it sounds like I don't have that posted yet because I got to find a copy that's not disintegrated. It was only on cassette. But it sounds a little bit like strobe light from the B-52s. But at the end, it's kind of a bluesy 6/8 thing like the end of Hot for Teacher. So anyway, so years later, Van Halen comes out with OU812 and they have a song called Hot for Teacher. Just a coincidence, but interesting. Something in the universe there. So anyway, we recorded the song Teacher. it was a cool song. We made some cassettes for the for our friends. Then I also did this song called Corn Dances and a song called Hour Of in those sessions with my brother Johnny on bass and then my brother Johnny on sax, John Cook on bass, Doug Throgmorton, who we'll talk about maybe he's been a dance.
Oh yeah, I know.
On the drums, Rick Jones on guitar, me on guitar, and we were four piece plus sax. Then I graduated to Northwestern. I brought the tapes down to Columbia and to WUSC, where I started working. And anybody out there, if you're college age or younger, go join a college radio station. If you love music, you will learn a lot about music. And if you want to be in a band, there'll be other people that want to do band stuff, even still. So WUSC, that song started getting played. And then we became Bedlam Hour.
Yep.
That's how that worked.
Okay.
So that takes us up to 83. And then we can answer some other questions. But that's how Bedlam Hour got launched. And then we played our first show in May of 1984 at a place called The Beat, which is no longer there, but it was on Assembly Street in Columbia. And that was the beginning of Bedlam Hour.
Who did you play with at that first show? Who were the other bands on the bill?
Bored Suburban Youth.
Okay.
BSY out of Irmo, South Carolina.
Yeah.
Troy Chang.
Okay. I don't know if that's one I've ever heard of before.
Oh, man. They're cool. Yeah. They later on, they joined forces with Steve Sonic and they became Red Menace.
Okay. Yeah.
Their singer was Darren Walker. Their guitarist was John Hathaway. And the drummer was Troy. And Troy later on played in Lay Quiet a while with Danielle Howe.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, and I think he's still with Tootie and the Joneses today. I just ran into one of their guys recently. They're more of a rock and roll type band, but they're still doing stuff. So, yeah it's kind of cool. So, yeah, BSY, man. I remember they were super punk because Troy, he was playing his drum set, but he had his floor tom was like a table to put his cigarettes on. It was like, he was just like so punk, man. He was awesome. It was the best. The only downside to The Beat was it was on the second floor, so there was no way not to have to haul heavy stuff upstairs.
Oh yeah, I've played in those kind of places before, and sometimes the stairs usually aren't made for it either. It's like got to go up a fire escape to get there or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but yeah, that's kind of how we got launched, and then there's more to come, but I want to make sure you get all your questions in. I know that was a little bit of a long-winded approach.
Oh, no. I love that. That's what I say about this podcast. Is I really don't have to ask a whole lot of questions. I just kind of like open the door and let people talk about what they love doing and what they've loved doing their whole lives.
Well, if anybody ever takes a quiz on this episode of the podcast, the key points they need to remember is the first record that I bought was Bay City Roller Saturday Night. The record I won at the radio station was The Clash. The coolest thing I saw on TV first was the B-52s. The first hardcore band I ever saw was Fear. But the first rock and roll band I ever saw was Rush. Yeah. And all those things, if you listen to them, they're still in my music.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's crazy.
I can definitely hear that. And then that's like, you hear all those things, all those little milestones you mentioned, and it makes perfect sense how you got to where you are. Because those are not just like things that you hear and just move on from. They're things that change your life. I mean,
especially in Rock Hill.
Yeah,
I mean, it's like you have a lot of time to think about that stuff.
Because I know
in 1980 Rock Hill.
When I first started getting into punk rock, it was, you know, before I had a car or anything. So just hearing some of the stuff, like hearing the Misfits for the first time was like, the way it was recorded, because I was used to listening to, you know, what hard rock was in the 80s, and everything had this super fine production. And then I hear the Misfits and it sounds like it was recorded in somebody's back pocket. And I'm like, Oh, this is, I love this. This is just so cool. I can do this too. Like, I can't do what Eddie Van Halen's doing, but I can do what these guys are doing.
Oh, and such great songs. And they were just cool. Just, they're still cool. Yeah. Love the Misfits.
So you started, you said you were in Columbia, Bedlam Hour.
I was in college, USC, and we got it going. And one thing you'll notice if you follow our history, it's I am the only original member until Johnny came back this year.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Well, I noticed now, are the members that you have now the same members that you had at the end of it?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. I was kind of noticing that at least.
Yeah, so the thing about it is I've always been blessed with really nice people to make music with in this project and in other bands, other things I've done. It's just when you're 18 and 19, you know this because you've lived it.
Yeah.
Things come up. People get an internship. People move. Mm-hmm. People get a job. They can't do it anymore. People get an opportunity with another band. I mean, those things happen. But in the moment with all these people, it was always wonderful. Loved playing with every one of them. So we started out with that original lineup. It was Rick Jones, John Cook on the bass, my brother Johnny on sax, me on guitar, Rick Jones on guitar. Johnny, of course, is 15 years older than me, so he started having kids and stuff like that, so he couldn't really do it, which is fine.
Yeah.
And then Rick Jones went on to form a band called Other Bright Colors, and they were more of an REME, The Church, 3 o'clock kind of band. Great band, so he went to do that project. John Cook grew up and went to work, and then so it was me and Doug. And then we got our buddy John LeRoy to produce us. And then in the session, I said, hey, John LeRoy, do you want to play the bass? I mean, he's a great jazz guitar player. He said, I'll try it. And so he did, and he was just awesome. So in 85, we started playing some shows with the three-piece lineup with John LeRoy, Doug, and me. And we went back. Well, we still had Rick Jones for a minute, too, because we went back and recorded the Vegetable Harvest album, which was a cassette release. Had about 18 songs on it.
Was that the first one? The first release, okay.
And that included the three from 83, Teacher, Corn Dances, and Wait On Me. Oh, and Hour Of, all those. And then a bunch of new songs. And we started playing a lot of shows. And so we got to open a man named Carl Singmaster, who started Manifest Discs and Tapes. Mm-hmm. He was also a show promoter. He was a friend of ours from the radio station where we all worked. And so he started getting us on some shows. So we got to open for Butthole Surfers.
Awesome.
We got to open for Meat Puppets.
Yeah.
Around that time, Black Flag started coming through. So in 1984... And we used to go to the shows together. You know, all of our friends, we'd all go to shows together. The Clash played the Township Auditorium at like 8 o'clock at night. And then the same night down the street at midnight, it was Black Flag, Meat Puppets, and Nick Heist at Strider's Concert Hall. So we saw the Clash, Black Flag, Meat Puppets all in the same night. That was huge.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Then Doug got a gig with Anti-Scene, you know, Joe and Jeff up in Charlotte. Yep.
That's where I know that name from for sure.
Yeah, he played his first recording with them was the NC Royalty EP, which is phenomenal.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, all the records are great, but that record with Marlon Cherry on the bass, just destroying the bass. Doug was just in the pocket on the drums. So he started touring with them, and they went on to do a lot of different stuff with Gigi and some other people. But so he started doing that. And then that takes me up to 86. So basically, I didn't have a drummer for a minute. And in 86, I got a journalism press internship in Washington, D.C. with Senator Hollings from South Carolina, which is interesting since I wrote Tear It Down later. And there's a circular story in that. But ended up going to D.C. And part of the internship was I worked in the Senate. But they put us up, and my dad had died, which is documented in Father and Son Reunion, our song from Rock the Cradle.
Yeah.
He died unexpectedly. It was very sad. So it was after my dad died, and it was the first summer after. And so I applied for this internship, and I got it. And I went up there to D.C., and they put us up in Georgetown University housing. Mm-hmm. And then we would take the subway or catch a little shuttle to go to the Capitol every day. Well, those internship jobs are cool, but you only work like 6 hours a day. So you have a lot of free time. Mm-hmm. And this was summer of 86. And there was a really cool record store in Georgetown, D.C. that I could walk to. And so I walked down there, and the Dag Nasty record had just come out on Discord. I knew about Minor Threat and all that stuff from working at WUSC. And I had purchased a bunch of the Discord records. Mm-hmm. And I happened to be straight edge, still am. Okay, so I was familiar with that. I knew about that vibe, that scene. I bought a lot of the X-Claim stuff, SSD, DYS. I was into Boston hardcore and all that kind of stuff. And I met this guy there named Ruben. And we start talking. And we were both into music. And we liked Dag Nasty and all that kind of stuff. We knew about Dave Smalley from the Boston scene. Mm-hmm. And he said, "What, dude, I'm in the band. And we're going to have a practice tonight. Would you like to come hear my band practice?" And I'm like, "Yeah." So he said, "Okay, so here's the directions. You got to walk over the Key Bridge, you get on the subway, and you head out to Arlington. I'll show you blah, 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 blah." I go out there, and I go to their band practice, and they're also recording in there. Their friend named Brendan is recording them. Mm-hmm. And it's this awesome three-piece band, and their drummer plays like John Bonham, and he looks to be about 16 years old. Mm-hmm. And I'm there for a couple of hours. The songs are just catchy. They're really good. I knew about Husker Du by then. So they had a little bit of a Husker Du-ish sound.
Yeah.
Which I loved, which you can tell from my stuff. And at the end of the night, Ruben said, "What'd you think?" I said, "Man, I absolutely love your songwriting. It's great. Your guitar playing is great. Your bass player is solid. You're a drummer. How long has that kid been playing the drums?" "Oh, he's actually a guitar player. He's only been playing a year and a half." It was Dave Grohl.
That's what I was thinking.
The band was Dane Bramage.
When you described his playing, I'm like, he's going to say Dave Grohl in a second.
John Bonham. Mm-hmm. A busy John Bonham. Yep, that's what he was doing.
And I knew he was in D.C. at that time.
Pictures from that on Instagram. I took photos there with a camera that I bought. And and so later on, we ended up, of course, playing with Scream. You know, a bunch of times, and mm-hmm. Dave was their drummer during some of that, which was cool. In fact, the whole time we played some Scream shows, we did a couple of them, Dave was the drummer. Well, okay, so then I come back to USC. Now it's just me and John Leroy. We don't have a drummer. We're going to audition. Somebody we knew at school said, "Well, I've got this friend that's coming to college this year. He's from Washington, D.C., and he is a great drummer, and he's looking to audition for a band." Well, it was our drummer, Scott Fry, who now plays with Isabel's Gift, legendary rock band.
Oh, yeah.
Great rock band. So Scott Fry became our drummer. That fall, 7 Seconds came through with Verbal Assault for the first time. Mm-hmm. And when they came through, can I go back to D.C. for a second?
Yeah.
Okay, definitely. The other thing that happened in D.C. was, of course, I loved Minor Threat. They had already broken up. I think Embrace was about to happen. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to get some Discord merch. So I got out the phone book. And it's before the internet. I got out the phone book, and I looked up Ian Mackay's phone number, and I called him. And I said, "Hey, listen, I'm in a band in South Carolina, and I love punk rock, and I really love what you guys have going up here with Discord. Is there a place I can go buy a T-shirt they didn't have at the record store?" "Yeah, you can just come to my house. You want to come over?" I said, "Yeah, that's fine." So he gave me the direction. So I go back across the Key Bridge. I get on the subway. I go out to Arlington. I go to the Discord house. And Ian Mackay is there. And we meet. And he's so gracious and nice. Mm-hmm. And he shows me around Discord house. And we go up to their office room. And he showed me. He picked up an acoustic guitar. And he's just kind of jamming. "Hey, this is something I've been working on." And then he shows me these fanzines that kids start sending them. And they're like these he was a little bit perplexed by it, I think. But it was these fanzines. It was like cartoons of like a kid with a shaved head with an X on his hand, all this kind of mm-hmm. stuff. And it was like really hardcore, like straight edge stuff. And he's like, "Man, I don't know about all this stuff. So what do you think about this?" Blank. I'm like, "I don't know, man." So anyway, so I remember him just kind of like raising an eyebrow a little bit about that. But anyway, we had a nice chat and I was able to buy my Discord shirt. So we'll part that detail because that comes back later in the band's career. But then we get back, 7 Seconds comes through. I give Kevin a demo, some of the songs, newer songs that I had recorded before Doug left. Next thing I know, I get a call from Kevin Seconds like 3 months later. Hey, man, listen, I really like what you're doing. Do you guys want to put out a record on Positive Force?
Awesome.
I said, well, you know, this is my second semester of college, about to graduate with a journalism degree in the middle of a recession. So I was like, well, let me think about it for a minute. Yes. Yes. Yeah. You would love to do it. So back up to Sun Sounds. My buddy Jake Hunter and also Mark Dixon, who was engineering. And we go back up and record, and we record the album that became Rock the Cradle. And of course, that does feature Scott Fry, John LeRoy, and myself. When I'm asleep, walking by, girls try to catch my eye, but none are as sweet as my baby. Do you feel that every day? People won't take me away, but none are as sweet as my baby. In every moment, every thought, every second, I love the thoughts of my baby. That girl was so good to me, you know, I love to set me free, no one's as sweet as my baby. Whoa. Happy with the recording. We get a lot of good compliments about it. The one thing that I wish I would have done differently, but I guess some people have told me it's part of the charm of the record, is that I had a really, really cheap guitar, and it fed back all the time. So, and this was on, you know, 1-inch tape, so there were no digital edits.
Yeah.
So looking back, I wish I would have put some foam in my guitar or something. So at least going into the lead on Gone or Giving It All Away, it's not just going to like sound like a jet airplane landing, but I don't know. It's kind of cool. So it's all good. So we recorded that. And that record actually features on lead guitar on the song Bedlam Hour, Danny Guyton. And Danny Guyton was a friend of ours who played in this band called New York. They were like a heavy metal band, and they were produced by Eric Carr of Kiss.
Oh, wow.
So we brought him in on lead because I wasn't really a hot licks kind of guy. He was. And that takes us to 87.
Yeah.
So, and then the band kind of starts going from there, but I can answer more questions if you like.
Well, I'm trying to think of some questions. You're pretty good about just laying it all out there without me having to ask a whole lot of questions. Yeah.
Well, I'm just kind of going in the timeline in order. I've been doing so much research since I, you know, got back in the game a little bit. I've really dug through and tried to really, you know, catalog everything and document everything.
Who were some of the other bands that were playing in Columbia at that time?
Oh, okay. So this is 87. So by that point, you had the transformation of BSY, Bored Suburban Youth, had become Red Menace by joining forces with Steve Sonic, who was out of Orangeburg. And then also out of Irmo, you had FYA, Free Young Americans, featuring Jeff Smoke on vocals, Kevin Eichelberger on guitar, and Brent Long on the drums. And Brent ended up being our next drummer after Scott left to play with Channel Zero.
Okay.
And then we had 87, 88, once I graduated from college, and we started doing some touring. We played some tour dates with 7 Seconds. We did some stuff when bands would come through. We played with Youth of Today. We played with King Face in D.C. At the 930 Club. We played with Token Entry, Crackdown, Rest in Pieces at CBGB's matinee. Token Entry were label mates of ours on Positive Force. So we started playing out, but when I was back home, I was working at Kinko's for a while, and I started putting on shows at this place called S&J's on Rosewood. And so a lot of new bands formed because they actually had a place to play at an all-ages matinee on Sunday afternoons. My buddy Jason Skipper, he goes by Rat Robot on Instagram. He had a band called GDS that were really, really good. There was a band called Death Squad featuring my buddy Scott Davis on the drums. Just a little bit after that, there were some speed metal bands that started happening. Sovereign, which featured Sonny and Buck Sanders. And Buck Sanders ended up getting a career in Hollywood as a composer. He wrote the score for The Hurt Locker. It's done really well.
So
they were around. And so there would be, at any given time, there would be, you know, hardcore bands and speed metal bands and, you know, kind of crustcore bands like Anti-Schism. They came in that time period as well. Scott Cooper and Liz, just phenomenal band. Kevin on guitar. And they were actually, Chris Bickle actually put out their first release on Stereonucleosis Records. And so we played a lot of shows with those guys as well. And funny story about Scott and Liz. So you mentioned the song Frankenberry Mosh. Well, Frankenberry Mosh, I wrote the music for it. And then the lyrics were the result of our next drummer, Brent Long, and I having a chat on the couch one day while eating Frankenberry cereal about what if we wrote a song about Frankenberry. Well, I'm going to get to that in a minute, but the Scott and Liz connection is, okay, so that was the fall of 87 when I wrote that song. Oh, actually, it was early 88. The fall of 87, Scott and Liz were over at my house. And we were sitting around chatting one afternoon. It was like 2:30 in the afternoon. Columbia is absolutely beautiful in the fall. And we were saying, man, we're really hungry. I'm like, yeah, I'm hungry. What do y'all want to eat? And Scott from Anti-Schism was like, man, I really like Fruity Pebbles. And Liz was like, yeah. And I'm like, I really like Cocoa Pebbles. So we ran to the store and we bought a box of Fruity Pebbles and Cocoa Pebbles. And then sat there and ate them, which I can't do now. If you listen to my new stuff, type two, it ain't no joke. But I still eat some, though. Anyway, so for about 55 seconds at one point, I thought I was going to write a song about the Pebbles cereals, and I just kind of put it off to the side. Then later on, ended up writing that Frankenberry Mosh song, and that ties into the CBGB's gig, because when we were up there it was the first time I had seen the Alleyway Mosh, and I'd really seen New York hardcore up front. And one thing I noticed was those bands, unlike the West Coast bands, they would all stop in the middle and do a breakdown. Not a China cymbal, you know, 89 BPM breakdown like now. They would have like Ray's breakdown. So the little the guys get out there and do the thing, you know. I'm like, oh, okay. I gotta put that in my mind and do something with that. Also, go back to that D.C. summer. I saw two bands at the Bayou that summer. I just go out by myself because, you know, I was just there by myself. I saw Anthrax, who our drummer is the substitute drummer for now when Charlie plays with Pantera, which is interesting. And I saw the Ramones. But Anthrax, I was amazed by the heaviness of their riffs and the tightness of it. And so I wanted to write a song that reflected sort of that New York dance style, but the heaviness of Anthrax. That was also about cereal.
Yeah.
And that's how that song. And there it is, the Frankenberry Mosh.
That's awesome. Well, I guess a lot of people that might, like me, that had an introduction with that song might have thought, oh, this band's kind of a jokey sort of band. But it really, a lot of your lyrics were more, you know, had a lot of more meaning behind them. Or I'm not saying that one doesn't have any meaning behind it.
Oh, no. It's a completely goofy song. It's meant to be goofy.
But, you know, you write lyrics. You don't just write songs and then throw some lyrics on top of them.
Yeah, sometimes it comes all together. Sometimes I'm just writing poetry, and then sometimes I write the riff and put poetry on it. It just kind of depends. And as a profession, I'm an English teacher, an English professor. So that's my thing. Because the other thing, I wasn't playing music as a kid, is I was reading all the time and writing all the time because my mom worked at Winthrop in the textbook department, and she would bring home all these discontinued games and puzzles and books and, you know, we had friends from around the world, so it really opened my mind. And so I try to use that experience to kind of shape who I am as a writer. And even early on, you can kind of hear there's some, and I think it's probably with a lot of songwriters, but a lot of recurring themes in my music. So one's going to be humor, jokiness, something you can dance to. You know, you can dance to all of it.
Yeah,
because we are a dance band first and foremost. The other thing's going to be about falling in love, or, you know, growing up and falling in love, something like that. there's going to be a spiritual side, something about God or about the universe or about how we fit in together, how we're one family, those kinds of things. So generally, or it's going to be about punk rock itself and autobiographical. So there's going to be, you know, the things pretty much are falling in love, God, silly stuff, and punk rock. And it hasn't changed, really.
I always like to say, like, the band that I'm in, we write music, and then it's like, oh, crap, now we got to put some lyrics on top of this. But like you said earlier, you really got into, like, the songwriters early on, and it reflects in your music, really, or in your lyrics, I guess I should say.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. One I forgot to mention that really had a huge impact on me was Al Stewart, the Year of the Cat album. Mm-hmm. Man, still listen to it all the time. And also Supertramp, Breakfast in America. Again, on constant rotation in my truck. Brilliant. And I love that whole idea of how the whole album told a story, just like in Husker Du's Zen Arcade, which I was heavy into before we recorded Rock the Cradle. That's why you can hear the guitarist running through a solid state Yamaha with two pedals, a chorus pedal and a distortion pedal, chorus all the way up. That was straight out of Bob Mould. In fact, we saw Husker Du that year on the New Day Rising tour and hung out with them, and it was super cool. And then we went back down and saw the Meat Men and hung with them. They were super nice. Tesco's one of the nicest people. And then we went down to Atlanta and saw the Minutemen on Project Mersh. And again, these people, I mean, the people in this scene that love this music are the kindest, open-minded, open-hearted people I've ever met, you know. Mm-hmm. And I've met a lot of really nice people, but I mean, and I think it's because, and I don't know why, but I think it's because it's really hard work to express yourself in something that's not necessarily very popular, but the people that are into it, you know, it's their heart. It's their heart and soul.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. That got brought up on the podcast recently when we were talking about me and one of my guests, we're talking about Mike Watt and just about how cool he was and how, you know, I don't idolize, like, you know, rock stars or whatever, but I idolize guys like that. You know, he's my hero. He's my punk rock hero. He's my rock and roll hero. Just because he's just a super nice guy and just so down to earth. It's like, you wouldn't know he played in a band if you didn't know he played in a band.
Yeah, exactly. He's just a regular guy. Same with Kevin Seconds. In fact, last night I went to Kevin's. He had a little online, live acoustic concert, like four songs. Did an amazing job. He always does. And he's just a nice guy who happens to be very talented. Yeah, and a friend.
That's what I love about punk rock, is it's full of people like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for real.
Now, I guess let's get back on track with where we were. You were 1988 or somewhere around there.
Okay, 88. Okay, so it's going to speed up a little bit because I got busier with school.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's, maybe we can anchor it with tours and discography, and that'll make most sense. So 88, then now Brent Long is our drummer. Scott Fry has moved on to play with our friend Frank in Channel Zero. Great rock band. So Brent joins us. And then around that time, John Leroy leaves to go to graduate school. And so for a minute or two, we're a two-piece. But we end up basically becoming a three-piece again. My buddy Adam Colasar from the radio station. He's the guy that's a bodybuilder that dresses like Frankenberry in the old videos.
Yeah.
He and I go way back. So, like, we were friends for a couple of years before. So he auditions, and then his first show is when Youth of Today comes to town. And we opened for them at S&J's, and he just did such a good job. We've always had kind of a comical, theatrical, funny approach, but Adam, being a theater major, brought it to another level because he could build props and he could make costumes, and he had really funny, you know, jokes and stuff. And so he really took that to another level. So that takes us to 88, 89. I get a job down at Fripp Island. I move down there. And then I've already graduated college, but the touring thing, we kept blowing up vans and blowing up cars. And it was expensive. You can hear all about it on the song, My Mother Doesn't Know a Punk Rocker. It's all true. But a lot of, I'm not going to lie to you folks. What you hear is what you get.
time once again to put those Doc Martens up in the closet. And it's time once again to file away the agnostic front 7-inch. It's time to erase all the strange voices on my answering machine. 'Cause my mother telephoned and she's coming down for a couple of days. God knows I wouldn't want to upset her or make her cry. But when I was 18, I tried to tell her that this burning for music would never die, but she wouldn't listen. My mother does not know I am a punk rocker. She has no idea of the music I make, or the life I lead, or the girls I date. My mother does not know I am a punk rocker. It is so far removed from her world, she will never ever know. She used to approve until I got beat up by a gang of kids. Then I ruined my credit, went into debt, much to my chagrin. When I look into my life, I can't hardly blame her. It looks like a wreck, but it's my beautiful wreck. It's what I love to do. It's the only thing that matters in my bland, unsalted life. My mother, she thinks I'm a yuppie and wants a house full of kids and a BMW. With all the money I spent on records and fanzines, I could have bought two BMWs. My mother does not know I am a punk rocker. She has no idea of the music I make, or the life I lead, or the chances I take. My mother does not know I am a punk rocker. It is so far removed from her world, she will never ever know. In my house I listen to the Needmen and the Nick Heist too. And in my car I worship Naked Reagan, Operation Ivy, and the night that I made love to you. In my mind I will always wonder about Ray of today and what he's wearing on stage. But at my mom's house I talk about work and what I had for lunch. And that's okay, no one knows everything about me. Life leaves me puzzled. It's burning in my heart, in my mind, in my soul. Life leaves me puzzled. I'm glad, my lover, that you know I am a punk rocker. It makes me happy. The tears of joy I cry. It's the only way I wanna live until I die.
So that takes us up to 89, and then Scott Keneally joins us. He's our second guitar player besides me from a long time ago. You know, he's it. And the way I discovered about Scott was I was asked to be a judge at a Battle of the Bands at Irmo High School. Everything goes back to Irmo High School, and his band played, and then I think they weren't really doing much anymore. So Scott auditioned to be in my band, and so he got added on as a second guitar player. His first show with us was in Savannah, Georgia, and then that takes us up to 1990. So in 88, with Brent on the drums and Adam on the bass, we went to Novus in Charlotte, and I recorded a bunch of songs, like 19 songs. At the time, we were talking to a European label about putting some stuff out, and that ended up not really working out. It's okay. Stuff happens. But we did get some good songs out of that. And one of the songs was Frankenberry Mosh.
Yeah.
The other song that you hear a lot still from that session is Stand Up and Fight. And so that takes us up to 90. And 90 was a busy year for us. So 90, we got signed to New Red Archives by Nikki Garrett from the UK Subs. And they put us on a compilation called Hardcore Breakout USA.
Okay.
We were on there with Sam I Am, Jawbreaker, Crucial Youth, a bunch of really good bands. And they put this on Stand Up and Fight on there. Then at the same time, Carl from Manifest started a label, Manifest Soundworks, and he wanted to see if I wanted to do a re-release of my favorite songs from Vegetable Harvest.
Yes.
So we put out the Corn Dances EP. Then Jay Matheson had opened the Jam Room Studio. Jay was a friend of ours because we played a bunch of shows with Bachelors of Art. And so we recorded the Porcupine EP that year. And then we got featured in 91 on Stupid by the Grace of God. So things were really starting to pick up.
Yeah.
That takes us into 92. Derek Roddy from the Boning Method joins us on the drums after Brent gets an internship with his biology degree. So now it's Derek, Scott, Ab, and me. I'm working at Superior Feet Playhouse, which was a punk rock store in Five Points. That's actually where I met my wife. So kids, if you need a wife or a life partner, go to the punk rock store. You might find one. So here we are 34 years later. So anyway, we added Ed Baker, my coworker, on keyboards because I was really into ministry and stuff like that, too. I liked industrial music, Einstürzende Neubauten. You can hear that in Rock the Cradle. There's all those industrial sounds in the back. That's on purpose. So anyway, we go to Sound Lab with Bob Moore, and we record a record that Steve Unsell put out because he also put out our Porcupine record on Family Fest.
Yep.
We did a cassette called Sardonic and Sublime, and it featured the song Tear It Down. That was like our big song from that cassette. So that's 92. We started an all-ages venue called Ape City that was in a warehouse where we practiced, and we would have shows, and it was just no drugs or alcohol, all ages, cheap prices, and kids could bring a canned good. And we had a relationship with the Salvation Army, and every Saturday morning we'd do a drop of like a couple hundred, 300 canned goods to the Salvation Army and to the food bank. And that was, you know, they could get in for cheaper if they did that. I think it was probably like $4 to get in. It was two if you brought a canned good. So we had bands in there like Screeching Weasel and stuff like that. It was cool.
Yeah.
And a lot of bands got started there. Independence got started there. My buddy Chris Snipes, ska band, horror ska, fantastic band.
Played with them a few times.
Dream House out of Clemson got started there. They played some shows there. Anti-Scene came down and played there. Pretty much everybody that we know and love, just friends from the region, would play in there. And then the summer of 92, we left for our next tour, which we did a tour of the United States in the summer of 92.
Yeah.
We toured on the vinyl that we had, and we toured on the new cassette that we had put out. And we made it all the way to California back, and it was really fun. And then we came back, and then in 93, Adam and Derek moved out of state. And so we were on a little bit of a hiatus. We did go in and record the American Technology 7-inch split with our friends in Stretch Armstrong. That was their first vinyl record. We were on one side with our song American Technology. And then I also started a side project called Virgin Iron Pants because I was also really in, like you, I love all kinds of music. So I was really into Smashing Pumpkins and Teenage Fan Club. And I wanted a band where I could kind of not necessarily have to do the hardcore thing, but still have an outlet to express that style of music. So I wrote this album called Lick My Wounds, and we put out a CD. and probably played about 20 shows in the region. So I did that in 93. Then, meanwhile, I'm already married. I'm in grad school. Mm-hmm. I'm working almost full-time, going to grad school, doing the punk thing. And 94, I graduate with my master's. Bella Maurer leaves for our European tour. We're gone over there about a month-ish, and had a really, really good tour. Went really well. Mm-hmm. And then came back, and I took a 48-hour nap, and then I woke up, and I had my first paid teaching gig. I was a substitute teacher at Airport High for the summer where I had interned.
Okay.
And then I got a teaching job down in Georgetown County. My wife and I moved down there. We go, the first year I'm teaching down in Georgetown County, we go to Wilmington for the weekend to see Earth Crisis and Sick of It All and Strife play up there. It was just a phenomenal show. And this is like the most Bella Maurer thing ever. Okay, so my wife and I go to see Earth Crisis, Sick of It All, and Strife on a Friday night. We come back on Monday, we find out we're going to be parents.
Oh.
And so that was the beginning of the arrival of the Walker clan 2.0. And so so at that point, when I did become a dad, meanwhile, I'm writing the Contact album in my garage in Georgetown where we were living at the time. Mm-hmm. Because I'd come home from school, just write. And so we ended up putting out the Contact CD. We recorded that with Jay Metzen at a Jam Room.
Yep.
That CD featured the addition of our guitarist, Brian McKenzie. Mm-hmm. And we put that out. We played a couple of shows, a couple of runs. Our last show at Rockefeller's, which is legendary. We were trying to figure out a way not to have stuff get broken and everything. We were very a kind band, but our fans were just not mean, but we had a lot of props and stuff. So a lot of stuff gets thrown in the air and things are happening. Yeah. Cereal, food, all kinds of stuff. I mean, our bass player was cooking on stage with a Snackmaster sandwich machine, all this stuff. So at band meeting before the show at Rockefeller's, I said, well, guys, listen, we got to figure out a way to have a gag that's not like going to mess stuff up. That's safe. Nobody's going to get hurt. And it's going to be funny still. Mm-hmm. Well, Adam, our bass player, you know, one of my dearest friends, of course, he's a bodybuilder. He looks like a wrestler. Adam, what about this? What if we go to Walmart, we buy a baby pool and we fill it with milk and cereal. And then we'll do like a really weird cover of Working Man by Rush, going back to Rush. Mm-hmm. I'll play the bass. You go out and you wrestle kids in the baby pool behind the pit, and then you come back up. It should be fine. Of course, total Bella Maurer response. Chuck, that's a great idea. So we go spend $50 at Walmart, buy all this stuff. Walmart of West Columbia. We go back to the show, set up. Everything's cool. Everything's going fine. We get to the middle of the set. Adam goes out, wrestles random people. It's fine. Back on stage, everybody's cool. Adam's covered in milk. It's all right. Derek has on a dress with pillows underneath it and a pig mask. You'll see that picture if you haven't seen it. So anyway, He gets hot, and he decides he's going to take the pillows out of the dress and take the mask off. He throws the pillows out into the pit. Of course, they're immediately destroyed. Rockefeller's has these industrial fans, or had these industrial fans that were blowing full blast stage and out, you know, oscillating. Everything's cool. I think we're doing Stand Up and Fight. Maybe we're doing like Benjamin Franklin, a little mosh song of some kind. I see a lot of commotion in the back of the club. I'm like, this is not going to be good. There's a bunch of a swarm of kids messing around that pool. And next thing I know, kids are picking that pool up. They're running with it, and they're launching it like a frisbee. Yeah. So this baby pool full of milk, like a flying saucer from the apocalypse, crashes on the stage. Milk goes everywhere, in the lights, in the slant monitors, the drums, in the marshals, everything, all over us. Meanwhile, perfect storm, the pillows have been completely destroyed. Tethers are blowing back on us.
We've sticking all over you.
World's first human chicken punk rock band. And that's how we ended our career, the first go-round. Because I told the guys, listen, I love y'all. I said, but, you know, I'm a dad now, and I'm not going to get in a van and do touring and all that stuff until this human being is a grown adult. Then I had another human being. Now they're a grown adult with another human being as theirs. And so full circle, here we are. The kids are out of the house. I survived cancer last year, became a granddad. So we're back. We're back at it. And that first human being, my daughter Dylan, she's going to be 28 this year. She's actually singing on that song, Regeneration. She does the female screen part in the breakdown. Awesome. So, and she'll be there. Her her boyfriend's our merch manager for the tour. So that's what he does. He's like a merch manager guy. So it's kind of cool. Yeah. So. And that kind of takes us up. And then the way we got back together is Derek Roddy and I, our drummer, we've, you know, obviously friends with all these guys, you know, through all of this. Mm-hmm. He was up visiting family in the Myrtle Beach area. And so we went out to eat with our wives one night at a really cool Mexican place that I like. And we just started talking about the old days. I said, you know, it's going to be 40 years this year, 40th anniversary of the band. He said, hey, man, let's get back together and record some stuff.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, let's do it. That sounds great. So that was it. And then I was already working with Brian McKenzie, our guitar player, because he's my music producer for a project that I'm also working on called Astronaut Assembly, where I play all the instruments, and this like three records worth of stuff coming out. Okay. And then Brian and I are also in a cover band called Small City Rot, and we play 60s garage rock. He's our musical director.
Okay.
So we kind of got them together. Derek tracked the drums in Florida. I tracked guitar and vocals up here. Scott came down from Columbia and tracked. Ed sent tracks down. Adam's going to be our live player. So everything's cool. So yeah, it worked out. Worked out great. So that's how we're back together. And then we got signed with River Monster, which I'm thrilled to death about. Great label. Great guy.
Love the label. Love Larry Parker.
So that takes us up to current day. Only took 67 minutes. Not bad.
There's got to be regeneration. Regeneration. For us to carry on. Oh,
I'm thinking about just, you know, we kind of wound down in the early 90s, but at that point, Columbia, so many bands were really picking up, you know, Unheard, Inhumanity, and then, of course, the Tonka Guys and Unheard did the Ass Factor 4 band. And then that was the birth of Isabel's Gift, you know, who at first were kind of more of a grunge punk band, but, you know, a lot of good stuff was just kept going. And that's sort of the theme of regeneration. The idea that this passion for music, this passion for what we call South Carolina hardcore, or really just hardcore in general, it continues. It's multi-generational and it's really eternal in terms of the DIY aesthetic and wanting to do something your own way on your own terms.
Yeah, there's a line in there about punk rock being for old people or something like that. I'm paraphrasing, but
yeah, punk rock and old age, now they go hand in hand. Yeah, punk rock and young age, I hope you'll understand.
Yeah.
Never stop fighting for what you know is right. It's time to take a stand of unity tonight.
Similar song one time for a band that was like something we tried to do during the years that I was kind of not really playing a whole lot, but it was called Please Don't Take My Punk Rock Away. It was about getting older and like, just because I'm getting older don't mean I can't listen to punk rock anymore, right?
Right. Exactly. It's more fun now.
Oh yeah, it's definitely
older and wiser.
Yeah. So talk about where people can hear the music, talk about the shows you have coming up, and then anything else that you want to say that we haven't talked about, then we'll kind of wrap up.
Okay, yeah. Well, my wife, this is why when I retired with the state, my wife said, honey, I love you, but this is 24 hours in. You've got to find a place where you can go talk to more people than just me.
Yeah.
So I went and got another teaching job. But so basically, okay, so we're going to be on River Monster Records. Mm-hmm. Okay. Pre-orders are tomorrow, April 24th.
Okay.
The release date is May 1st. You'll be able to access all of our digital recordings on any platform you like, Apple, Amazon, Spotify, of course, all of the River Monsters platforms. You can do Bandcamp. At the live shows, we are going to have a special run of CDs available.
Okay.
So you can buy CDs there. I guess it's okay to go ahead and announce, but there's going to be a split 7-inch with our friends Brandy and the Butcher. That's
awesome.
Jay Madison's group.
Yeah.
And that's going to be on River Monster also. And then stay tuned for some possible vinyl. And then as far as merch, we've had a lot of requests for remanufacturing the Frankenberry Mosh t-shirt. So you heard it first.
Awesome.
Right here. We have new Frankenberry Mosh t-shirts.
I'll have to get one of those.
Yes, absolutely. And I'll make sure. And we're going to have t-shirts promoting our new record, Win $1 Billion. Buttons, lanyards, stickers, coasters, you name it. We're going to have it. Posters, pretty much anything you want. Because the focus of this, quite honestly, is life is short. It's our 40th anniversary. This is the punk rock family reunion tour. We're all one punk rock family. We're still here, all of us together. and let's just get together and have a good time and celebrate life and enjoy some great music. And so that's what that's about. So, for example, in Columbia, we're going to have a meet and greet before the show. The doors open at 7. The first band goes on at 8. So from 7 to 7:45, we'll have some tables set up where we can just, you know, catch up with everybody, take photos, sign stuff, whatever they want to do. And so we're excited about it. So let me talk about the tour for a second. We're only doing we're calling it the South Carolina tour because we're only playing three shows on this run. The first show is June 16th. I live in the Myrtle Beach area. So we're going to play Fresh Brewed Coffee House on a Friday night, June 16th. And we're playing as the headliner. And then we also have the band Circuit playing. Circuit are a phenomenal hardcore band. They're young. They're like 19. Some of the kids in Circuit are the children of the guys in Bazooka Joe.
Okay.
Fantastic Myrtle Beach band. Who, when I was discussing the ages, should have mentioned them. They weren't from Columbia, and the question about Columbia, but we played 100 shows. I mean, we're really close friends with them. So Circuit's playing. Brandy and the Butcher are coming down to the beach to be on that bill. Mm-hmm. And then Mike from October Chorus, his electronic project, Heavy for the Vintage, is opening. It's going to be a really great night. That's all the shows are all ages. So that's going to, I think doors open at 6:30, showtime 7 o'clock. That's Friday night. Saturday night, June 17th, we're going to Columbia and we'll play New Brooklyn Tavern. That's with my brother Billy's band, Soda City Riot. Mm-hmm. In fact, Billy Riot is a guest vocalist on the song Regeneration as well. He does the first screen part, the breakdown, and he does the whoa, whoa, whoa's with me.
Yep.
So they're playing, Brandy and the Butcher on the bill. That's going to be a great night. That's the night we have a little more time to visit with everybody, and we're really excited. This will be our first live show in 27 years will be Myrtle Beach, but our first live show in Columbia in 27 years will be Columbia. That's Saturday night. Sunday night, we're going to be playing in Charleston, Sunday night, June 18th, and that's going to be with the legend himself, Mr. Herman Mutant from the Sex Mutants, the first South Carolina band to have a 7-inch record out, Suburbia record. Herman and I are really old friends, and so his band Hybrid Mutants is going to play. And then my new buddy Devin and Shim Creeps, they're going to be playing as well. And shout out to Devin for putting that show together, and shout out to Tim Roof for putting us on there. So that's going to be cool, and we're just hoping everybody just has a wonderful time and that we can just celebrate together and really make it a family reunion. In fact, I'm thinking, just like if you go to a regular family reunion, you have those hello, my name is tags. I think we're going to have those. And you guys, feel free to put on the name tags. It'll help me out because if you look at my old pictures, look at me. I don't look the same. So, it's going to be good if we can all help each other out a little bit, just like going to a high school reunion. Yeah. This is just like a punk rock high school reunion, pretty much.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to try to make it to that one in Columbia. That's going to be a busy weekend for me because I got a show to go see in Asheville on Thursday. And I think I'm going to go to Wilmington on Friday to see the Murder Junkies. And so maybe I can work it out to where I can get to Columbia on Saturday night.
But I think that sounds good. I tell you this, Mike, if you make it there, I will make it worth your while. We are going to pull out all stops.
I definitely want to see that. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
It's going to be something, and I'm excited. I'm excited to have, you know, most of my family there as well, and just a lot of great old friends, and just really, really looking forward just to saying I love you. I thank you for being here, and let's mosh it up.
Yeah, heck yeah. Awesome. Frankenberry, blueberry, yummy mummy, Count Chocula. Frankenberry, blueberry, yummy mummy. And here's how it goes. President Francisco told me the other day in the food lion next to the Great Train, he said, Frankenberry sucks, and I think he's dead. I said, let him say. We'll be right back. I'm glad you're doing it again. I always love when people come out and because you can tell it never, we talk about this a lot, never really leaves you. Even if you have to give it up for a little while, it never really leaves you. So I'm always glad to see people come back out and say, I'm ready to make music again. It's time.
That's right. Well, you know, and, you know, I work with teenagers. I'm a high school teacher. And they'll say stuff, well, Mr. Walker, what's it like to be old? And I'm like, well, you know, it's really like being a 20-year-old, but you're just, your body's different, but it's your soul's the same. You're still the same 20-year-old person. Thank God I'm a lot wiser than I was when I was 20.
Yeah, you're smarter, but still stuff. Pretty much the same person.
Now I do less dumb stuff.
Yeah.
I'm too tired to do dumb stuff, so I'm good.
That's about the most true thing I've heard all day long. I'm too tired to do dumb stuff.
I am.
I understand that a lot.
Any extra work for me at all, I'm not doing it.
Totally understand that. Stage. Awesome. Was there anything else you wanted to talk about? Or?
No, Mike, I really appreciate it. Listen, thank you so much for having us on, having me on. And I can't wait for you to hear us. And I hope you can make it. But if you can't, you know, if these shows go well, look out, folks. We'll be playing. Yeah. That's maybe at a festival near you, and you know, maybe some one-offs, some runs. Our drummer, he does play with Anthrax part-time, so depending on what they got going on, we try to work around what he's has going on, and hopefully it'll work out, and we'll see how it goes. I hope we sound good. We're going to rehearse really hard.
I like everything I've heard so far, so looking forward to seeing it live for sure.
Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it, and thanks to everybody out there listening.
Oh, you're welcome, and I appreciate you, man.
This has been a Gabba Gabba Hunt Media Production.